Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China's PMI is slowing in the service sector, unemployment at 8.2%, but there's a catch. And is Apple's move over? All this and much more on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 258, for April 10th, 2012. Well, thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz, and it is the middle part of April, and we are looking at a very changed dynamic when it comes to the markets, when it comes to the S&P 500, and when it comes to the U.S. markets, which have really been an amazing leader of markets over the last 6 months or so. And even though we saw some of the markets in Europe and Asia do really well, it's been a little bit of a struggle over the last 2 or 3 weeks. We actually had the last couple of weeks down on the U.S. markets. And we're going to discuss why that is and kind of come to some conclusions today and talk about some of the things that are behind what's going on. One of them we talked about last week, and I'm going to put up some other information on this. It's called the Economic Surprise Index. And I want you to pay close attention to this. I want you to look at this because it is something that hedge funds look at and other institutions and the people in the area of institutional money will look at and see the divergence in what is happening on the economic side and what's happening in the markets and make some adjustments in their portfolio. So we'll talk about that. One of the things I think we need to really address first and foremost is the whole idea of what is happening with the employment numbers. Now, Friday, the markets in the U.S. and for most of the world, except for, I believe it was Russia, were closed for the holiday. But there was a period of about, 45 minutes between 8:30 and 9:15, right after the employment numbers were released, that the futures markets were opened. And as soon as those numbers came out, which was 120 on the new jobs added, as well as an 8.2% unemployment rate, which seemed better. We saw the 120, which was far below expectations, but the 8.2 was better than expectations. And you would think that, well, we're seeing a better unemployment rate. It's edging lower. That's better. Why did the futures then sell off about 15 handles on the S&P 500? In fact, if you add in the fair value, it's closer to about 20 handles, close to about 1.6, 1.7% on the S&P 500 or so on the futures. Now, what's going on there? Why was there such disappointment in that number? Well, here's what happened. And I want you to really, I think it's really important to pay attention to the nuances of the statistics here to really understand what's going on. What happened was that there was an expectation of about 200 or so thousand jobs added. But we came in at 120. And 120 is the lowest we've seen in 5 or 6 months. And that really wasn't taken very well. One of the big things was that we saw that maybe, possibly, there was a little bit of a pull forward in the employment numbers because of the warm seasons in January and February. So that was one issue that was a concern. The other issue was that the 8.2% is not very representative of what's really going on because, once again, the labor participation rate moved lower. Now, what does that mean? Because I think you may say, well, that's, you know, a little statistic here, a little statistic there. But I want to explain what this really means and how you have to look at this. When we look at the pool of people that are involved in the employment universe, right? So let's just take a number. Let's say that there was 1 million people that were the total people eligible for counting in the unemployment or the employment ratios. And all of a sudden, 10% of those people were out of jobs. Okay, so we have a 10% unemployment rate. Now, what happens when that labor participation rate starts to move lower? Let's say that instead of 1 million people, it's going to be 900,000 because 100,000 people just entirely left. Let's also say that, in that number, the 100,000 people are still, you know, looking for you take some of those people that were before employed and now they're out of the labor force. Well, what happens is when you do the calculation, when the labor participation rate drops, what happens is that you get a better unemployment rate. It's a simple calculation. And it doesn't exactly always work like that because you could have a lot more people working potentially, and the numbers kind of crisscross here and there. But with all those people that are not working anymore and they're out of the calculation pool, if you will, what happens is that you're going to see an unemployment rate drop. Now, that may not make sense at first, but this, if you think about that and what's going on, both sides of the equation start getting a little wonky. So when we're seeing that we have a historically low or close to a historically low labor participation rate and dropping, a lot of people are just out of the workforce. They say, you know what? We're not looking for a temporary job. We're not looking for a full-time job. We're not looking for anything because we're just disgusted or we retired or just out of the workforce entirely. And that being the case, we're seeing a better unemployment rate. Possibly, this is what President Obama was saying or thinking when he said that by the time the election rolls around, the unemployment rate will be 8%. But when you really dig down on the numbers and you realize that if you add back and you look at what the real unemployment rate is, with the fact that the labor participation rate would maintain a certain level, this it would maintain a solid level of where it is, in other words, it didn't drop so much, you would say that the unemployment rate was much higher, close to about 9.5% or so. That is what really was upsetting on Friday, I think, to markets. When you look behind the numbers, when you really kind of pull back the veil, pull back the curtain, and see what's going on behind the statistics, not just the headline number that you saw at 8.2%, you saw that there was 120,000 people hired, which was about 80 or so thousand less than was expected, and the unemployment rate dropped, but it was because of the lower labor participation rate. What happened is that markets reacted very appropriately. Now, how is it going to play out with earnings season that starts next week? Well, that's another story entirely, because already we're seeing a substantial change when it comes to the earnings expectations. What we're seeing is that in January of last year, of this year, and December and in November, there was an expectation that this quarter coming up would have about a 20% increase in earnings, EPS earnings on the S&P 500. That's been ratcheted down to 5%. But yet the markets have maintained their high level. So the markets haven't really adjusted yet to what could be the earnings in this quarter coming up. That's where some of the concern is coming. Now we're on shaky ground. The markets are on shaky ground. Yes, there's a lot of liquidity there. We've talked about this. Yes, there's a lot of people just trying to catch up and beat the indices because they really failed miserably last year with the hedge funds and with the mutual funds that fell so far behind. But what's happening now is that it's possible that there's too much exuberance being seen in the markets at this point. And the number that we're seeing on the S&P, round number 1400, is really suspect. Because are we going to see those numbers hold if, in fact, the Fed does, in fact, say they're going to pull back a little bit and not really offer a quantitative easing 3, 4, 5, whatever it may be, unless they see a substantial decline in the economy? Are we going to see those numbers hold and the EPS multiples hold if, in fact, we don't have the earnings that we can stand by? We're going to see. Next week, we start Tuesday with Alcoa, and by the end of the week, we have J.P. Morgan, and then we start rolling into the following week, which is just a barrage of earnings again. Now, we're going to cover all this because a lot of this is going to be in our earnings report. We'll talk about that in a second over at Trigger Point Research. And what you're going to find is, I think, that there is going to be a lot of surprises going on. Now, further, let's kind of talk about something. The Economic Surprise Index. We talked about that last week, and I want to kind of bring that forward a little bit because what we saw was a major divergence in what was the surprise index, which is simply, okay, expectations are X. What did the real number come out at? Whether it's ISM manufacturing, whether it's the Fed, Philly Fed numbers, whether it's employment numbers, you know, any kind of economic number when it comes to inventories, whatever it is. What is the surprise index showing? When we look on a monthly basis, just a month over month over month, we're seeing that it's been dropping and a big divergence. If you plot the S&P 500 alongside of the Economic Surprise Index, in the beginning of the year, we saw the S&P much lower, if you just plot it, and a big gap, in other words, a catch-up required, if the S&P 500 was going to go was going to, in fact, correlate to the economics out there. So we're seeing a lot of positive surprises towards the beginning of the year. And then what was happening was the S&P wasn't there. It wasn't really registering that there was some better than expected numbers on the economics. So what happens now? Well, when you look at that, and I put this chart up, I want you to look at this chart. I put this chart up on a daily basis going back a year, the economic surprise index that Citigroup puts out and the S&P 500. And there is a major change that has occurred. And the major change is that the S&P 500 continued to rally on towards the 1400 mark. We just saw that. And the economic surprise index turned very sharply and has been sloping lower and lower. It was as high as, I think, close to, let's see, it was as high as close to about 75, 80. And now it's a 6. So when you look at that and you see now the differential, it's exactly opposite of what we saw in the beginning of the year. In the beginning of the year, there was a big catch-up the S&P had to do if they were going to, if it was going to play out that, you know, the S&P will ride the direction of economics. Now there's a big catch-up the S&P has to do again if it's going to ride the direction of the economics, but it's to the downside. Now, when you look at this chart, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, look at the show notes from this particular episode, and you'll see the chart right in the middle. I want you to look at this chart because it's important to visualize this. It doesn't say that, well, you're going to meet and it's going to make that. You know, there's not a linear correlation when it comes to the values here. It's directional that I want you to pay attention to. And also, not only directional, but look at the slope of the line, the slope. And if you look at that and you think about where the slope should be, you're probably looking at, I'm kind of looking at the chart right here, the S&P should probably come down to about 1,300 or so if the economic surprise index holds this level. Now, of course, earnings are going to play into this and central bank policy is going to play into this, interest rates will play into this, and you know, you kind of go down the list of things that are going to play here. But if you really look at this and you look at this very carefully, you'll see what I'm saying. Now, one of the things we looked at recently was where are the support points and where are the resistance points on the S&P 500. There's a support point about 1368 that we see. That was what we called for last week. About on Tuesday, I put up a chart and showed, okay, where is the levels of the S&P going to play out? If, in fact, the futures, which we're looking at right now on Sunday night late, and we're seeing that the futures are off about 17 points or so about that, you know, we're talking about somewhere already that we're about 1380. 1380 on the S&P 500, and that will be on Monday morning or so. You know, there'll probably be some buying coming in there because that rampant buying testing out whether it's just a quick dip and going to recover or what. But at the same time, we have seen a change in the market trend. We knocked it down last week, one on our market trend indicator, and right now we're in an uptrend. But I'll tell you something, if the market does in fact close down about 1.5% approximately, This is approximately the level that will knock it down again and be in a clear downtrend and into the next level, which would be a strong downtrend. These are times that you want to be very careful about your longs, take some profits. We took profits on a variety of stocks last week on Tuesday and Wednesday. We actually have in our portfolios for clients a put option on the S&P 500 going out to July. And we also have a call on the VIX. We have some short positions on the portfolio on individual positions and on the small cap index as a hedge against our long positions. Now, is it time to throw in the towel and just run for the hills? No. I mean, there's some really good stocks that you want to look at. There's some great positions out there that still can provide substantial upside. No question about that. But realize something, that when you're in a market downtrend and when you see institutional selling start to play out, this is investing 101. You're going to see most stocks go with the direction of the trend if it in fact is a downtrend, and they will correct much greater than the markets themselves. You know, the averages will correct 5%, let's say. You know, individual stocks can correct somewhere like 15%. Not every one of them, but I'm saying generally speaking. So realize that you need to tighten up your stops at this point. You need to put some protection on your portfolio if, in fact, we continue to see this kind of action in the markets right now. And I'll tell you something, that, you know, markets, just like trees, don't grow to the sky. And if you have a feeling by institutional investors that there is going to be a lack of liquidity due to the what's happening in the U.S., the Fed. If you see that the risk factors, which they are in Europe, are starting to roll over and you're starting to see again Spanish bonds are driving higher and yields on them, and same thing with Italian bonds. Greece is saying already they may need a third bailout, and you're seeing Portugal starting to squirm a little bit and have some problems there. And on top of it all, clearly defined recession in the Eurozone region. So when you add that all up, you know, what do you have? Well, you have China possibly reducing rates and possibly adding some stimulus. Forget about Japan. I mean, what, you know, they're going to add stimulus like they have for the last 25 years. You know, what is that going to do? Their yen has been, you know, doing very well to benefit their markets of late. But, you know, we see a situation where the risk is kind of entering back into the markets. I would venture to say that the yen is going to be a great bet to go after and to look at that on the upside. The yen will start to rise again. And where was it? About 82 to the dollar. So now we're going to see it probably move down into the 80s, if all things being equal, if the risk factors are on again. Already we're seeing the dollar against the dollar index start to move up against all major currencies, the basket. It hit 80 last week, and that's becoming a problem. You know, one of the big issues that you'll see is, you know, oil has been dropping off at 102. It was much higher. We're seeing gold drop off, although it's been rising a little bit. At the end of the week, and probably with some of the fear entering the market, there'll be some buyers of gold and possibly even silver. But at the same time, realize that commodities in general work in the direction of the dollar. So you see a rising dollar, commodities will fall off, and a falling dollar, commodities will rise. And because there has been such a tremendous amount of bullishness by hedge funds and speculators on commodities, that you'll probably see them starting to pull out and change direction very, very quickly. Already we saw that there was a report on Bloomberg over the weekend that commodity speculators have become much more bearish. And I think the funniest thing, or more, maybe not funny, maybe the most interesting thing, is that usually when we're finding that the hedge funds have gone one direction, the market seemed to somehow go the other. Just last week on Tuesday, there was a report out that hedge funds have become the most bullish they have in like months and months and months and months. Yet the market all of a sudden starts rolling over. So I'm not sure what, you know, Kool-Aid they're drinking over there at the hedge funds, but they seem to be on the wrong side of the tracks lately. And then we'll finally mention in this discussion of where's the market going, that you know, Goldman is maintaining their call that by the end of 2012, you're going to see the S&P at 1250. That's the call for the end of the year. So that's a pretty substantial move lower from where we are now. Is Goldman right? Is Goldman wrong? I don't know. But you know what? They've been pretty good at some of these numbers for some time, and whether or not they have you know, the ear of somebody in a high place, or whether it's good analysts or whatever it may be, it's something to take notice of, if nothing else. All right, let's talk about just take a quick moment to discuss GoToMeeting real quick. Just think this is something that I, you know, they sponsor the show, so we give them some time here, because not only do they sponsor the show, but I use their product, and it's a great product. GoToMeeting is one of those things that you can, one of those, I think it's revolutionary, frankly. You go away and you can actually simply, you know, be wherever you want to be and still communicate with people in a very robust and a very personal manner, because they have this new product called HD Faces. And it's a simple online meeting service with a group. I mean, pretty much is what it is. And it helps you really get better connected to people that you depend on for success. So with GoToMeeting, which is a Citrix product, it just takes a webcam and you can click instantly and collaborate with your team or clients in real time, which is really neat. And the beautiful thing is, as I was mentioning, from anywhere around the world. And we use GoToMeeting for collaboration here. And I always mention I do it with my family. My daughters are in college. So what we do is we kind of just do a GoToMeeting and look over different homework items and questions and things and, you know, kind of catch up that way. It's kind of neat. You can get a 30-day free trial very easily. Just go to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. The promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use that. Go to GoToMeeting.com, free 30 days. All the things, all the bells and whistles for 30 days for free. Check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. GoToMeeting.com. Okay. So we talked about the unemployment numbers. We talked about the markets. We talked about the Goldman call. We talked about the new market trend indicator that we put out for our market timing models. Let's talk about the Fed. Because a lot of things that you've been reading lately is that the Fed has said in their latest report, which came out last Tuesday, that, well, they're pretty much done with any kind of quantitative easing or bond buying, et cetera. Now, I read that cover to cover. It was about 20 pages or so. And I'll tell you something. I didn't get that impression when I read it. I didn't get the impression that they were just absolutely out of the markets, absolutely kind of finishing up on any kind of quantitative easing, bond buying. They seem pretty dovish. I mean, yeah, they had less of a dovish feeling and overview of the whole process because they're talking about the economy is getting better, and they mentioned that things were kind of better in the employment, better than they expected and all that. But, you know, at the same time, I thought it was interesting that there was such a tremendous amount of news headline that the Fed is pretty much done with their bond buying and then their QE talk. It's possible. But that really wasn't what I read when you read the report cover to cover. They mentioned that if the economy slowed down, they would get back into further, whether you want to call it stimulus or easy money policy or liquidity injections. But, you know, they weren't out of it. They were just kind of taking a pause at this point. Now, that may be enough, just a pause, may be enough to spook those investors who are relying on quantitative easing, Fed stimulus, Fed easy policy to, you know, push their bullish bets. Now, that being the case, okay, I'll go with that. If you want to look at that as a reason to kind of pull out, first of all, I got to tell you, it's pretty pathetic that we have to rely so hard on the Fed to stimulate the economy at this point. And, you know, with the realization that earnings have been much better than they were, and growing dramatically on many companies. I mean, you can look at some companies and they're at the highest they've ever been in history, their stock price. Many companies. You know, so, and there's some that are at the lowest they've ever been, but I'm saying you've really seen a dramatic change and a take up in the potential for net earnings for companies, and that's pretty impressive. So when it comes to the Fed, I think we have to obviously don't fight the tape, but don't fight the Fed, more importantly. But at the same time, I just didn't get that impression. I don't know what you did, and if you, anybody out there, read the actual piece or just relied on the news publications about what was going on. But I didn't get that feeling. I think the Fed will step in, and they're being, you know, ridiculously aware of market conditions, the wealth factor, and I think the coordinated effort and concerted and coordinated effort throughout the world by central banks is disheartening, because it you know, you want the markets to really ride on their own. You don't want to have to keep relying on their, just, you know, having this continuation of worrying about what's the Fed going to do or what they're not going to do to keep markets afloat. And I got to tell you something. I think economics have gotten a lot better. Yes, they have been dropping off dramatically when it comes to expectations, but that also is due to the fact that economists are just, you know, ridiculous. I don't want to call them stupid, but they're just bad these days. And maybe it's because, it's possible that it's because the Fed, you know, has their fingers in everything that it's so hard to predict. But at the same time, economists have been wrong to the downside. In other words, they've been, in the beginning of the year, they were calling for X and it was X plus 2. And then they went to X plus 2 and now it's X minus 2. So they're on the wrong side because they just can't get a handle on where things should be. And they're over, you know, they're over optimistic, they're under optimistic. And you got to always watch for that. You know, when economists do a catch up, and that's really what the economic surprise index is all about. When economists start doing a catch up like they've been doing, it doesn't lead to good things always. So just realize that. All right. Enough of economy, although we have some things coming out next week that are important. And that we have to keep a watch on what's really going on with the inflation numbers, what's really going on with the PPI. But we'll look at that next week. But let's talk about the idea of Apple. I've gotten a lot of emails recently, and people are saying, hey, is Apple's move over? It looks like it's over. Now, I want to kind of explore this for a second. What makes anybody think, except for the fact that Apple has moved dramatically higher, and you want to be contrarian, that Apple's move is over? Is it because there's a certain pattern in the stock? Is it because there's some kind of lack of buying their product, lack of innovation, change in management, tax issues. I'm trying to think of things here. They paid a dividend. I'm reaching here. Let's think. Is it because maybe, there's a product that's bad? You know, something's wrong with one of their products? Because what happened in the Foxconn plants, there's some, bad manufacturing conditions that are going on. I mean, what is it? Because I've yet to figure out what that is. Now, if you want to say, well, how high can they go? Well, I don't know. How high can they go? We have predictions. They came out. They're 1,000. Now they're trying to trump each other. 1,001 came out last week for the price target. They have possibly the iPanel coming out, which is their new TV system. They have the potential for incredible sales of their iPhones, which continue on. You know, I don't know if you've walked around anywhere lately. Just look at the phones. Try this. Go somewhere with a lot of people and look at their phones. It's like impossible to find an area that just everybody doesn't have these iPhones. And I have one, and I think I know why that is. It's an incredible device. Now, is a Android device better or worse? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that a lot of people have an iPhone. And it's an overwhelming amount of people when you look around. And they're clamoring for it around the world. Now, what's next? I don't know. I don't know. Is the iPanel going to come in to be a great family/household appliance that's really going to revolutionize things by being the centerpiece of your entertainment system? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. The ITV that I have, the Apple TV I have is a pretty cool device. I don't have the new one. I have the older one. Pretty cool, showing pictures, watching movies, downloading podcasts and things like that, writing to TV. That's kind of cool when you have an HDTV. It's really crisp. It's clear. You can take a picture from your iPhone and just throw it right on the TV. It's very nice, very neat. Your videos, YouTube, Netflix, all that's on there. So again, what is it and why is it that people are saying, hey, I think Apple's move is over? Okay, well, one of the things that you see is that when companies get to a certain size, they really have a very difficult time going past that. And Apple's size is large. I mean, large. You know, they're like it's their own country. But you don't know what the next innovation is going to be. I read this weekend something about how they have satellite imagery as well as some mapping that shows that one of the facilities they're building right now is expanding dramatically. And they potentially going to be for major servers that are going to be held there for maybe the iPanel or maybe some other kind of media dissemination of some sort. That'd be interesting. You know, if they do something like that, watch Netflix, obviously. But at the same time, you know, I think it's important not to try to guess what's going on. Will Apple come down a little bit? I think that if the markets come down, Apple will come down, although it hasn't happened yet. But, you know, it is going to be part of the markets like anything else. Although, now with the dividend, there may be players that are flocking to Apple because you see about $100 billion of cash on the books. And $100 billion of cash on the books, you know, that's a pretty substantial number. And, you know, you can go a long time with that, you know, whether you're an individual or a company, you can go a long, or a country for that matter, you can go a long time, even with, you know, lack of amazing sales, to keep the company not only afloat, but to keep things going pretty well. R&D, innovation, you know, you could do a lot with $100 billion. Even pay out the dividend, buy back stock, et cetera. So you have a combination of them buying back stock, you have dividends, you have innovation. Is Apple's ride over? You know, here's what we did. We pared back some of the position a couple of different times. It grew. We pared it back a little bit more, took the profits. We still have about 2.5% or 2.75% position of Apple in our portfolios for TDIMG, Managed Growth Strategy. And that's the trading accounts that we have. And of course, you know, we have it in our other global allocations through ETFs/, institutional mutual funds. I don't want to be the one guessing the exact day. You want to call a top and you want to be excited about calling a top in Apple. You probably could have done that 30 times already. But you know what? When we're investing, when you want to have discipline and you want to follow some rules, you don't want to guess. Because you know what? You're not going to outguess what the management of Apple is going to do, what the mutual fund managers are going to be buying and selling. You can't do that. What you can do
when it gets to that point is watch the chart and watch the trend and watch what's happening. When you see it rolling over, when you see it breaching key support levels, that's when you know things may be over. I thought at about, I guess it was about 500 and change, maybe it was 525, 520 or so, there was a chart pattern that showed that there was an exhaustion gap going on with Apple. And I was pretty sure, you know, that's kind of looking like we're getting a little bit to the point of being exhausted on where Apple could be, you know, where you see this giant gap up after a big run. It's usually called an exhaustion move. You know what? I was wrong. So that was at least a pattern that I could, you know, kind of hang my hat on a little bit. But right now, we don't see that. Is it flattening out a little bit? Yeah, it needs a rest. Again, with the markets, it will definitely move with the markets since Apple is such a large part of that. If you see futures moving down, you see the Qs moving down, you see money being taken out of ETFs and mutual funds, obviously they're going to take profits in Apple as well. But we do have earnings coming out. The one thing I can tell you is this. The one thing I can tell you speculatively is this, that the last time that Apple came out with their earnings, they blew it out and, more importantly, and I think this is really important, they really showed guidance that was just incredible. Very unlike Apple. They usually sandbag a little bit. But they showed some great guidance. Now, there I could say, you know, maybe they could disappoint because they're not going to show such a gigantic beat. And who knows if the guidance is going to be as strong. But we have till the end of this month to figure out what's going to go on there. So just to all the people that wrote me about that, that was an elongated and I hope not too boring discussion because that goes with all stocks. That goes with all positions. You don't want to guess that something's moving in a direction before it moves. Yes, you can pick up something maybe on a bounce when it levels off. Maybe you can short something when it, you know, on the top end when it kind of starts leveling and kind of starts rolling down. But don't get too far ahead of it because you can get your head chopped off. And in this business, when you get your head chopped off, it costs you money. Now, over the last few weeks, I've been mentioning about this trigger points research, and we had that trial that went on very successfully. Hundreds and hundreds of you came on and checked it out. A lot of you signed up for the subscription, and I'll mention again that if you're looking for stock ideas, if you're looking for instantaneous, you know, positions that you can say, okay, here's what's going to happen. At least we think this is what's going to happen. It's going to blast off from this point. It's going to break down from this point. We send you an instant email / text message that is happening, and you can actually go trade it on your own. And we provide you all the details of everything that's going on over at Trigger Point Research. And I got to tell you something. You know, it's depending on what subscription you take, you should be able to pay for the subscription on a monthly basis with one transaction and not of big size. I've gotten a lot of emails from people who have been doing it and have been on this. And I got to tell you something. I'd be surprised if, you know, you do sign up for a subscription and you may be hesitant, oh, am I going to pay the $99 a month? And you know what? $99 a month, you take a couple thousand bucks and you invest the way we're telling you to. And if you can't make the money back from that plus on a monthly basis, I'd be pretty surprised because the numbers are showing what's going on here. We're about, I think, 65 or 70% accuracy after the first day and week. So we're only talking about trading, you know, a one day to 30 day transaction. So in other words, we put out the alert, you buy it right then, or you sell it, or whatever you do. We give you the top end level of where you should be taking profit. We show you where the stop is, and it's all right there, and you can kind of just follow along the bouncing ball. And if you have ever wanted to have an account where you're doing some trading on your own, but at least it's kind of like assisted trading, you want to check that out over Trigger Point Research. And if you don't, and you're listening to the show all this time, and you're not, you know, if you're looking for advice on how to do things and learning and education and, you know, how do I do that, this is a great way to get your feet wet. But what I want to mention is, more importantly, that this is the second phase is coming out, which is Trigger Point Research. We have the alerts, and now we have reports. And what you're going to be seeing coming out, and which you need to pay attention to, is the pre-earnings report, which is going to start with Alcoa this week. Kind of looking for what to expect with the earnings and how the stock trades over the next, we'll call it 10 days, and what has happened historically and what levels you should be looking for if you want to trade aftermarkets or if you want to trade following that or use it as a guide for a stock that you own, for example. We'll show you where the number needs to come in for the stock to move higher and what will happen potentially if it doesn't, and on an earnings and on a revenue basis. It's a really pretty report on top of it. It gives you a lot of color coding of what's going on and a narrative of what to look for. We also have the market timing model coming out. We've been asked by many people to do something like that. S&P sector rotations will be coming out. We're rolling these all out over time. Global Rotation and Score Sheets. Kind of cool stuff over at Trigger Point Research. Here's something else I want to mention. I got a lot of emails over the last number of months, and people have asked me, hey, what is your daily routine? What do you do? Well, all right, that's a good question, because I've mentioned some of this before, but I think it's important that you have some kind of a routine that you could stick by and some things that you could look at and understand at a quick glance what's happening with markets, what's happening with the world, you know, just to get a kind of a, you know, an overview of what's happening. So first of all, I like Bloomberg. I use the professional version. If you have a, whatever phone, a smartphone of whatever kind, you can get the Bloomberg app for free. You can see the news that's going on. There's like a 15-minute delay on quotes. But okay, the news is good. It's clean. It's scrubbed. I like their news department. There's a couple of things I don't like. I always write them telling them, you know, I'm kind of sick of you talking about stimulus. I'm, you know, where do you come up with this idea? But you know what? Generally speaking, the news is great there. Briefing.com has a great service. There's a couple of freebies on there for economics. They also have some pay-fors. But you can get some great stuff over at briefing.com. They have a really nice desktop setup, if you will, scrolling news and information. And they what they do differently is they do a quick analysis of it, which I think is great. Then you have the other thing that I use is, believe it or not, when I'm not in the office, we'll use, aside from Bloomberg, which I have, the live one, but forget that. I use CNBC for stock quotes because they're pre-market, live during the day, and post-market quotes are live for stocks. Markets are a little bit delayed. But nonetheless, and the futures are delayed, of course, as well. But you use that, and it's great. Now, if you want to set up your desk, you know, if you come in and do this, you kind of have FinViz. You can look at that. There's scrolling news from a lot of different sources, New York Times, Yahoo, Business, Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal, MarketWatch, all that's on the left side there. Then you get the blogs on the right side. But, you know, that's a great place to kind of have a look also. Now, so I look at Bloomberg first. I kind of see what's going on with the news around the world during the morning. The first thing before markets, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. See what's going on there. Take a look at some of the pre-market quotes, what's happening around different stocks that we own. Kind of get a feel for what's going on. Take a look at FinViz. I like to look at that to get a summary of what's happening. Look at Briefing, of course, see what's happening there. And, you know, then during the morning, we check out all of our stocks, look at the stocks, where they're positioned, what the charts are, look at the charts that you have, the setups that you're looking at, alerts that you may have set somehow, whatever program you're using there. And stick to those, by the way. If you set them in advance, don't second guess yourself. You know, that's something that happens a lot to people. You know, you set these alerts, okay, I'm going to buy here, I'm going to sell there, but also the market condition changes maybe a little bit and you get a little cold feet. Stay with your plan. Stay with your plan. It could fail, but stay with your plan unless you change your plan. That makes sense? Like, stay with the plan unless you totally change the plan, not because all of a sudden you're feeling something in the heat of the moment that isn't right or wrong or is right. And then during the day, what I do is I do have Briefing up on my screen at all times. I have four monitors. 24-inch monitors that are spread across my desk. Plus, I have a Mac and a laptop. So we have futures going on one, and I have portfolios going on another. And then we have all the different market conditions between commodities and international and currencies all spread across all these screens here. And I'm talking about my office. And so we can kind of get a quick left-to-right glance of what's happening at all times, alerts going as well. I read and I scrub through the Wall Street Journal. I like Dealbook at the New York Times. I like Market Watch. These are kind of things that you can, you know, do on your own. I like stock charts for stocks if you can use those. I have my own charts I use through Bloomberg and through a few different services. But I like the charts over at Stock Charts. I think they're great. You can put a lot of things on there, and most of them are free. A subscription is very cheap. Just to get the if you want to store charts, save charts, annotate them and save them, et cetera, I think it's a great service, Stock Charts. Probably the best out there that I know of. I read Investor's Business Daily, pretty much cover to cover every night. I get it on my iPad, and it comes out about, I guess, about 8 o'clock at night or so, 9 o'clock for the next day. I read it cover to cover. There is some political things that are more right, kind of slanting to the right, conservative, that you can kind of pass over that if you want. But their stock analysis and their guides there and their tables are, I don't know of any better. I don't. You can also use their Market Smith program, which is a great analysis of fundamentals and technicals. And we've had Scott O'Neill on here several times. We're going to have him on again soon. But the Market Smith is a great product. It's not cheap, but it's superb, really. And their newest version, I don't think this is on the iPad or the Android system, but I think it's just on the desktop version. It will show you and actually give you chart patterns to be paying attention to, which is really neat. It has a an engine to put the chart pattern actually on the chart for you, what they're looking for, whether it's their double bottoms or their, you know, they have their own little lingo over there. Their cup and handles, their double bottoms, their square box, their what else do they have there? They have like three or four others that are, oh, they're 3 week tights, 4 week tights. They, you know, they have all these going on. But I look at the weekly, by the way, you know, talking about charts on the routine. I'll look at the weekly, the monthly, the daily, and I'll even look at the shorter terms, the minutes, the 5 minutes, the 10 minutes. We'll kind of just get a feel for what's going on here. Sometimes you walk in and you see that, wow, stock is down 6%, but realize something, the first couple of ticks, you got to just get rid of. You know, you don't know what's happening really. We don't really like to do anything major until at least 9:45 in the morning. We really try to hold back and make any decisions because oftentimes you'll find that things are a little bit wonky from 9:30 to about 9:45. You know, you got the trades that happen because the night before there's some overflow that, you know, comes into the market right away in the morning, whether it's the buy or the sell. You'll have just some bad liquidity or illiquidity, I should say, in the market at that point. And what you want to do is stay away from that. You know, don't chase that. There are times you want to do something there, but generally speaking, I want to stay away from that. You know, yeah, if the stock is down a lot, it really is for whatever reason, maybe a bad tick or something like that, that's one thing. But if there is actually a stock that's really down hard and I really want to buy it for some reason, I may nip at it a little bit before 9:45. But generally speaking, really, it's kind of like the markets are in the process of waking up. And you'll see that change. 10 o'clock oftentimes are economic numbers. We'll look at all the economics throughout the day and do some comparisons, look at some charts, look at trends on the economics throughout the day. You know, and that's really from about 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock. We kind of, you know, that's that lunchtime lull, we call it, in markets. And you want to kind of see how it plays out. We want to look at something, for example, which is the pivots, the daily pivots on a daily basis on the S&P, the Russell, maybe the Dow, on the NASDAQ. You want to also look at something called the opening range, which is a 20-minute range of returns. Oftentimes, markets will stay within that range throughout the day, and they break down or break up is where you want to start to maybe look at doing some daily trading, if that makes sense to you. You know, and you look at the change in direction. So if you see the first 20 minutes, you kind of draw some lines across a chart. Some charting programs will have that for you. Just you could look at that and see if it breaks down or breaks up from that level. We'll keep the euro on the screen all day and the dollar. That's important, as well as oil, gold, silver, natural gas. And then, you know, also, of course, as I said, you know, look at the chart throughout the day and kind of adjust if something's moving and see what the most up, most down are during the day, and then look at the news and why that is, and kind of, you know, thumb through that and see what's happening. So, you know, in the end of the day, about 2 o'clock, 2:30, you want to start looking at, you know, what's happening on the wrap up. Is things changing? You know, what's happening again on a daily basis, and then you can culminate at the end of the day. Write your notes. We write notes to our clients every day on what's going on. It's a good idea to put down on paper some of your observations throughout the day, what you did right, what you did wrong. What you're looking to do tomorrow, make a game plan so that you're not, you know, caught off guard the next day on, you know, hey, what should I do here? You know, you have a plan. It's important. I think that's the part of the discipline that is the most important, is to have an actual plan. Sometimes those plans go awry. Sometimes things happen that are a little nutty, crazy, cuckoo. But, you know, at the same time, if you have something written down and you have a game plan that you're going to go by, at least you have something that you can kind of, you know, hold on to and say, okay, this is where my game plan is. If it breaks down, fine, but I'm not going to make any sudden changes to that game plan until I see a difference and kind of something changing up there. So it gives you a big overview, a very quick overview, and hopefully you may have to listen to that a couple of times to understand, you know, kind of what's happening, what I'm doing. But basically, you know, you want to stay with a core service. You want to stay with something like a briefing, and there's others that will give you an analysis as well as some in-depth look at what's happening with earnings when they come out, what the expectation was, et cetera. And, you know, because the headlines aren't always the number. You know, oftentimes we find when you see a headline come out, okay, you know, ABC stock did, $1.09. They were expected to do $1.22. Well, wait a minute. Were there any extraneous numbers in there? Was that really the expectation on the headline? Was there, you know, a comparative that was more important? We always look at the comparatives. And, you know, you have to look at those and see really if there's a meet or beat. Because if you think about it, how many times have you seen a stock actually, you know,
miss but go up, or you know, do really well but go down. That's because the headline number is really not what you want to be looking at when it comes to earnings. So if you're trading on that headline number, or if you're thinking that you're going to do something on the headline number, but the truth is that there's something really behind that, and there's some extraneous numbers that are causing that to move differently than is you know, was expected, and maybe because the comparable is different. So there you go. Okay, what else do we have to talk about? I have a whole list here of things. I mentioned earlier that the PMI index, the service index in China, was slowing. And that's been coming down a bit, and a lot of that is the overlap or overlay of what's happening in Europe. And I think the fact that they slow down the appreciation of their yuan and their currency. And, you know, I gotta tell you something. I'm a little bit suspect of the official PMI number on the manufacturing side that we saw last week, because that was a really good number, but the HSBC numbers that have been coming in have been not so good. So I kind of have this troubling, gnawing, you know, something in my ear lately that says that, you know, if the best jobs in the world in government are in China, most millionaires and billionaires, I mean, it's a great job if you get into the government in China. And their job is to make things look rosy so they can do better for themselves. You know, would they? Well, I think it's possible. And if the private numbers that are coming in, the privately private statistics by HSBC and other indicators are coming in, and they're not as rosy, do we trust those more than we trust what's happening with the official numbers by the government officials? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of corruption there. We know that. There's a lot of hanky-panky that goes on with these numbers. I just am a little skeptical about what is the real number here. So what we do is we'll take a blend of the two numbers, right? We'll take a blend of the HSBC number. We'll take a blend of the official number to see what direction it is. And the truth is that China is slowing. And, you know, one number here or there may be better, but they are slowing. Will they have additional stimulus? I don't know. You know, the growth is important. Inflation moderation is important. You know, the question is which is going to win out. But I will tell you that clearly there is a knock-on effect to the recession and the lack of imports from Europe, which is one of their main trading partners, if not the, you know, the greatest trading partner. And I think that's a big issue right now, and that's why you're seeing some real question in the Chinese stock markets. And in fact, what we saw last week was an interesting move, and it's almost a desperate move, I thought. Whereas the government said that they're going to double the available amount of inflow of foreign investment into the stock markets to publicly traded companies in China. And I thought that was really interesting that that move was done just to prop up their markets, which it did by about 2 or 3% after the markets continued to slide maybe like 4% the previous week. So, you know, they're kind of making these twisted moves to, you know, manipulate how the markets, the stock markets are doing, and at the same time trying to clamp down on inflation and slow down the economy. So that's a very strange relationship, I think, right now when it comes to China's markets. We're staying away from it for the moment, and we have some exposure to some Chinese companies like Aneti's. We have also Taiwan. We have Silicon Motion, which we've taken some profits on, NetEase. But NetEase, I think, hit an all-time high last week. They're one of the you know, the internet babies over there that does online gaming, multiplayer, a massive multiplayer online gaming. They got the World of Warcraft and a variety of other very popular games over there online, the online versions. And it's a very well subscribe to service, and NetEase is a little bit different in that you know, it's the gaming, it's as the major component of that. So we'll see what happens there. What I want you to pay attention to next week is the general trend, and if things, you know, see a lot more volume in the markets, and if you see this drawdown, there was a lot of very little volume on the way up through this range, and that is a potential for a drop off. Like I said, down to 1368. Next stop, and then from there you kind of get down to about the, I think it's the 1320s. But if we continue to see a little bit of this slowdown in the economic indicators and any kind of disappointment in earnings, I think it's going to be very telling of kind of the next quarter, what's going to happen here. Larry Williams, actually, who we've had on the site show before, I talked to him last week. He made a prediction at the beginning of the year that the first quarter was going to be very robust and very good for the stock market. And about April 20th, things were going to start falling off and changing, and there was going to be a big drop into May, et cetera, a little bit of a pickup. And then I think the summer, he said, was going to be pretty rough. So far, so good with his prediction. And if, in fact, he if the markets do start moving down lower now, I mean, it's only, what, 10 days off? So bravo to him. Props to Larry Williams. I suggest you kind of read his work and follow what he does. We're going to cut it short here for the Easter holiday and for Passover holiday, and well wishes to you and your family on that. I do ask you, please, to go check out Trigger Point Research, and I think you'll be very happy that you did. Worst comes to worst, you stick around for a couple of months, you don't like it, but so far so good. We're getting a lot of great feedback on that, and I really encourage you to check it out for a couple of months at least, and let's see what happens. The other thing I want to mention to you is, if you don't even want to manage your own portfolio, Horowitz & Company has the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, $50,000 minimum. If you kind of don't know how to short, the market's going to come down, you want to profit on that, well, we go short, we go long, we use options. That's how we do it, and we keep it very transparent so you can see what's going on all the time. You have access to your own account. It's not commingled. You also have access to a private website that has all the discussion about what goes on, you know, in the economics around the world that is just for our clients. And you can check that over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. See the virtual tour, which is about 12 minutes, discussing, you know, how we do it, what we do. Go check that out as well. It's time to not be complacent right now. It's time to get a little more actively involved. If you think about it, you know, the markets don't always run up. They take a nice break every once in a while. They flush out a few things. And then, you know what? Let's try to take advantage of that. Anyway, I'll see you next week. Thanks for joining me on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. See you real soon. Have a profitable week. Be careful out there. The market trend does seem to be changing. And again, I'll see you next week with a great guest. We didn't have one this week. It was a short week. And, sometimes it's good to be just you and me. Thanks for joining me. Bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.